Well, this should be interesting. I guess we'll all know an hour from now whether or not it's interesting. When I stand up here behind the pulpit, I try to be careful not to make it about me. I recognize that I serve a Lord and it's all about Him. I don't think I understood that quite as well 23 years ago. Sometimes I listen to some of the earlier recordings and I hear myself talking too much about me. But at this point in life, I try not to talk about me. However, I know that people have questions, biblical questions, theological questions, but questions about me and questions about my personal life and private life. And for the most part, I'm a private person. I don't talk a lot about it. And there are things that I have never said publicly on the internet. But every once in a while, someone will send me a note on the internet asking questions like, "Whatever happened to your Australian wife?" And that's a question that comes up every so often that I suppose needs to be addressed. Back in December, Micah and Tom and Jeff and I met together. And Jeff and I came up with the idea, well, what if we just have an Ask Me Anything night? You can ask me just anything because I am an open book and I've got nothing to hide. So I'm going to begin the night with the most obvious question. I'm going to give you a very brief synopsis of my marriage history. It was 1987 when I got married out in California to the mother of my children. We were married for 17 years. What I'm not going to do is sit up here and trash the mother of my children. But what I will say is that when that marriage ended, I did step out of the pulpit for several weeks. Barney Johnson was up here regularly to kind of keep us going. We were a very young church at the time. There was even talk of maybe we just sell the building and say, well, we tried. But then the men who ordained me and men who I trust, and some of the men here at GCA, I say some because there was a holdout, but they all concluded once the dust settled that that wasn't my fault. So they told me to continue in the ministry. It was Elder Ward, probably more than anybody, who convinced me to keep going. So all I can tell you is the circumstances were such that when it was all said and done, I raised my children. I homeschooled my children, and I tried to be very, very fair with her. Then I was alone for 14 years, alone, celibate, not dating, just no. People would try to set me up with dates, and I'd say, what did I ever do to you? I don't. And then it was 2017, homecoming of 2017, that a woman showed up from Australia. Most of you here in the room have met her. And it just seemed right. Everything seemed right. She'd been listening for 6 years. We were very compatible. We got along really well. And it just seemed like a good idea that we continue to talk. When she went back to Australia, we talked every day and decided she's going to come back and we're going to see if we should get married. She came back. We did get married in September of that year. It was a very public wedding. It's very big. The building was packed, and it was on the internet, and there was a whole lot of goodwill. There was a tremendous amount of goodwill from people just happy that I had finally found what looked to be my mate for life. And through those 14 years, I admit that I was lonely, and I thought that perhaps this was the cure. I'm great. I'm not lonely anymore. I've got somebody here. Well, December of 2019, I put her on a plane back to Australia because her mother was not well. And while she was there, the fires that sort of consumed much of Australia occurred, so she wasn't able to travel and go see her family immediately like she had planned to do. So what was supposed to be a month trip dragged into 2 and 3 months. And then COVID hit. And anybody who knows anything about Australia and COVID knows that Australia shut down hard. And neither she nor I were willing to get the vaccine. That's right, I'm an anti-vaxxer. There, I've said it out loud. There's my big confession for the night. And so she was locked there. I was locked here. I even went so far as to contact the U.S. Embassy and find out if I could go there. And they said, no, they won't let you in. You can't go. And of course, during those days, they wouldn't let me on a plane anyway because I couldn't, you know, prove that I'd been vaccinated. So anyway, two years plus, we were separated. We talked every day. I supported her monthly. And it was June of 2022 that I discovered through a mutual friend that in April of that year, she had married somebody else. Okay, now that was a gut punch. But because our marriage here in America was not on record in Australia, she was able to get married again. Well, to my way of thinking, if you're going to destroy a marriage bond, you can't do it any more completely than adultery, bigamy, and abandonment. So she hit the trifecta there. And so George here helped me to do the paperwork, and it went through very easily here, and that marriage was dissolved. So that's what happened in my previous two marriages, and in both of them, while I would like to think, I'd like to think I was the victim here. Certainly everybody has culpability for everything they go through. But I also didn't do that. I didn't get remarried while I was married. That was a tough one. So I have been single since then. And as I talked about on Sunday morning, I think under those circumstances, if I did want to get remarried, I think that I can. If anybody has an objection to that idea, please let me know. So that's the story of my married life. And that's the first time that I've said it out loud in public that that's what happened. So there, I hope that answered all those questions. What else has anybody got?
Yeah. Just to clarify, so I understand. So when you met her, you said you met her at homecoming. You married how many months later?
Seven.
So, my question is, because every trial and tribulation that we go through, really, it's a learning experience for our own self. Mm-hmm. So what would you say was the best to have in those, your second marriage, related to that? What's your takeaway from that? What did you learn the most about yourself? Not that you were a victim and all that. What did you learn about you through that process?
Well, you asked me similar questions last night.
What's your takeaway, your learning experience?
Right.
Your personal, not what did you...
Well, here, I can answer that question, I think. Yeah, I think I can. Yeah, because I did talk to the guys, Tom, Micah, Jeff, after I discovered that my marriage was over. And I did give them my resignation. And I was ready to step down because I didn't want my private life to become an albatross around the neck of GCA. I didn't want anybody to be able to say, well, you know, the pastor at that church, he's been divorced now twice. You know, that's a bad look for a preacher. And so I attempted to quit. And they wouldn't let me. Fortunately, I guess 20 years of teaching grace has its benefits. But they said no, they wanted me to continue on. What I learned was, number one, I learned that I'm not prone to drinking and I'm not prone to drugs, because if there was ever a time, that was it. Secondly, I learned, and I mean this genuinely, I learned that God is enough. I had to bow to his sovereignty. I certainly asked him more than once what that was all about. Why? Why'd you drag me through that? But in the end, I learned that I just have to say, yes, sir. That's what you did. That's what happened. And so I recommitted myself to this work and to the sufficiency of God in all things. So I think that's the best answer I can give you, Anne.
So trust in God's enough, trust in him. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
And if there was drugs and alcohol available, you might.
Yeah, no drugs, no alcohol. I did OD on chocolate. That I did do. Yeah, so.
Is that possible?
No. No.
It is possible.
When you start with one M&M, it's never one, is it?
All right. Who else came here prepared with a question? Who else came in with a question?
I have a question.
Sure.
This will be a far shorter answer. I don't know that you've ever laid out the structure of this church as far as how it's done legally, corporately, and take a few seconds and lay out.
Sure. When we started GCA years ago, it was a Bible study in my house. I had been doing two home ministries a week as part of the church in Franklin, and one of them was in Thompson Station, and one was at my house here in Smyrna. And then those home ministries got canceled, and the folks in my home ministries, both of them, came to me and asked, does that mean we have to stop meeting? We like our group. We like these people. And so I abided by what the church wanted, but then over the course of time, it became necessary to leave that church. And I don't believe in robbing other churches. I told everybody, stay there in the church you're in, but I decided I was going to start a Bible study at my house. Couple of those original people came, but I was very adamant that I didn't want to rob another church. And so that was really the beginning of it. I just wanted to do a Bible study. I'm very comfortable with the title of teacher. I was not comfortable with the idea of pastor. And then one day, one of the folks in that group said, you know, you've become my pastor. And I slapped him. And so when the land next door became available, we bought that. It's a rather remarkable story because it was just horse land. It was a mess. It had an old barn on it. But we talked the city into letting us build on this side of the high tension wires and then parking under the high tension wires. And that was our intention, was just to do that. It was $20,000, which nobody could believe because property up and down this street went for way more than that. And in one day, one person gave us $20,000. So instantly, we were whole again.
What year was that?
2001, I think, yeah. So then this building became available. And in the process of doing all that, we realized that if we were going to take up offerings, if we were going to have a bank account, we needed to have a 501c3. We needed to become a Tennessee corporation, a tax-exempt church corporation. In the process, we had to discuss what kind of church polity we were going to have. Were we going to have strict membership where members had voting rights, or were we going to be elder-led? And we are, to this very day, a nonprofit public benefit corporation. That's the way the church is set up. And we are elder-led, and when we file our paperwork every year with the state, we have a president, a vice president, and a secretary, rather than elders and deacons. So that's the structure of it, and what we found out pretty early on was that as long as people trusted the leadership, we could come to them whenever we were going to make a big expenditure and say, this is what we're planning to do. This is what we're thinking about doing. And then people would give us an opinion, and that was as good as voting rights. We listened to the congregation. So we are an elder-led public benefit corporation. I'll tell you a great story, though. I had a friend out in Franklin who did the same thing, had begun a church. And he opened a bank account before they filed for their 501c3. And he got hit by the IRS hard, penalized everything else for raising money as a church before that, before he had the 501c3. We, on the other hand, paid the fee that you have to pay to register as a 501c3. And I was at work at the studio over in Brentwood one day. My phone rang. It was a guy from the IRS. He asked me several questions. He said, you're filed here as a public benefit corporation. No, you're filed here as a private benefit corporation. That's the way that Mike and Brent had originally set it up. And he said, are you going to be a benefit to your larger community? And I said, yes. And he said, well, that's what you do want to be. You want to be a public benefit corporation. Okay, great. And then he said, and by the way, if you do that, you're getting half your money back. And so we even got our half our money back for, so it was all done very well by Brent and Mike all those years ago. Is there more you'd like to know about our, the way we're, you know how we're structured.
I know.
He asked it for us. You asked it for us. That's a good
yeah.
question. Yeah. I have a question.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Exactly how much the pastor made, mm-hmm. and you know what were all the bills we got.
Right.
A whole thing of it. Do we get that? Do we have privy that here?
We used to do that in the early days. We did that every quarter, and we found that when we put those reports out on the table for people to pick up and take home and read, no one did. And so after a few times of doing that, we kind of said, "Does anybody care about this? We're doing it." And nobody cared because they said, we trust you.
Right.
And because we're very open about what we're doing, how we're spending money. So, yes, ma'am.
I know how important it is to you and also to the congregation if, you know, that this church live on and God's word continue. So my question is, in terms of our how we're formed, what's the succession planning? Because, you know, none of us are promised tomorrow. We're all promised, you know, to die one day.
Right.
And so, you know, I think about the future and succession planning a lot in my career. And so
yeah.
People always think about ways to get into business, but they seldom think about ways to get out. But I know you are a planner, and that is very important to you. But I'm just curious because I don't know, you know, about that. And I do love this church and care about it. And just curious about succession planning. And I know that's a men's group probably thing, too.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's something that we've talked about a lot because Jeff knows I use the phrase the next guy a lot. And I've always got my eye out for the next guy. And, you know, that's why I give Micah opportunities to speak. Tom or Steve, anybody who wants opportunities to speak, I'll give it to them.
I promise you I'm not the next guy.
But see that, right, because there is, I don't think Tom's the next guy.
But as we get older, you know, our health is a concern.
Sure, right.
And I
Shame
love all of you guys.
Right.
And I want to know that your work gets to continue.
Right.
And not just on video.
Audio, sorry. Yeah, to a certain extent, I can't answer that question because I don't know who the next guy is. Now, when I get hit by a bus or keel over dead, which, you know, I'm planning later this evening, whenever that happens, then Micah and Jeff and Tom are going to have to step up and say, now what do we do? If they decide that Micah, who knows what we believe thoroughly, if he decides, I'm the guy, then he'll step up and you all will decide if he's the guy. We have asked Micah a couple of times if he's ready to be ordained an elder. And he has said, not yet. So I appreciate that he takes that seriously. But one thing I know is when it's time for you guys to find the next guy, I won't be here. So, you know. You figure it out.
We have talked about, you know, we are associated with the conference.
Yeah.
And so there is actually a lot of young men out there who are studying and hopefully
and believe like we believe.
So we'll hopefully have somewhere to look to.
I fully expect you to be here for at least 25 more years.
Yeah.
That's my pressure that I'm putting on you.
Are you kidding? He's always done that.
I'm just thinking about it.
I just want to say that Pastor Jim has been saying he's dying since he turned 50.
I know. And I feel like he told him, if I'm still here, he needs to be here.
I'm so glad that you all have plans for me.
So,
I don't want to be here 25 more years.
Yeah, neither do I. I'd be happy if none of us were here in 25 years.
Bob Blown said that this morning.
Yeah. Yes, Paige.
The website, so all of your preaching and stuff, how is that, is that a subscription? Is there a danger of that ever, expiring? Or, how does that work?
Yeah, the website, which was originally begun, early on, we decided we need to be on the web. We could see the trend line. I didn't want to do radio or TV, which was always the communication vehicle, especially when we were out in California. I knew how to do that. I knew how to buy time on radio and stuff. I just didn't want to do that. The internet seemed the way to do it. So Jeff took over the website from there for a while. And then one day I said to him, what if we have an archive? Because I have a hard drive with all this stuff. And the archive has continued to pay big dividends. I get email regularly, weekly. Just a couple days ago, a guy wrote to me just to thank me for the archives. So what it is it is on a platform called HostGator. They are our hosting service. And as long as we pay them each year, the annual fee, that website will continue. It's a WordPress site and probably needs to be updated. Okay, definitely needs to be updated. So we've been talking about trying to find some young coder somewhere who'd like to take a stab at, you know, getting paid to fix our site up. But as long as we continue to pay the host, then that site continues.
Is it expensive for the host here?
No.
Real cheap. They just changed us. We used to be on what they called the baby plan, and it wasn't that expensive. And then I started getting emails saying that we've outgrown the baby plan, and they were going to transition us to a different plan,
and everything's downloadable.
Everything's downloadable for free.
Yes, for free, you can download everything.
From the very beginning of the website, I said everything on the site is free. Has to be.
How many gigabytes and terabytes is that?
It's a bunch. I don't know exactly.
Do you have that on a hard drive? I think you do.
I do.
Zip it up and put it in a Dropbox folder.
Protect it.
Yeah, we have backups.
Yep. It's a Christian.
And HostGator has plenty of backups.
Yeah. What else? Those are all good questions. I appreciate that. With the exception of the expectation that I'll be here for another 25 years. Outside of that, these are all good questions. Sure.
In sermons, you have mentioned your history in, the Lutheran Church as a child, then the Church of California, which is certainly not a Reformed Church. And now here we are, very, very Reformed, firm belief in the sovereignty of God. There had to have been some kind of evolution in your understanding.
Yeah.
And I'd be interested in knowing how that came about, because I can tell you that story for myself.
Mm-hmm.
But not just as your thinking changed, as you encountered the scriptures, but were there books that you read that had an impact so on? What is that history of how you came to be?
When we left the church out in California, we moved here. Came here because my folks were here. Didn't want to raise my children in California, so we came here. And I decided I was going to I was just tired of people telling me what to think of the Bible. And I realized that I had always read the Bible piecemeal. You know, the pastor out in California, every week it was a different verse from a different section, from a different... And I didn't understand the structure of the Bible. And so I decided I was going to take a year off and just read the thing. And I remember saying, even those things I don't understand, I believe. I'm just going to read it so I understand the structure of it. And I bought myself the Alexander Scorby reading of the King James Bible on cassette. And while I was driving around in my little Dodge Colt, I always had those cassettes on, and I was always listening, trying to understand the structure of the Bible. So one day, on a Sunday morning, I happened to see a local TV show. Now, this is back before Local 17 was a Fox affiliate. So it was Local 17, and there was a preacher. And in those days, I used to watch preachers just to see how long I could watch them before I could drive a truck through their theology. Because there was just so much silliness out there. So I saw a guy who I stopped and listened to for a moment, only really genuinely because the production values were so local and just not very good. And I stopped to kind of chuckle at him. I know that's cruel, but that's what I did. And doggone it, if he wasn't saying things that were exactly like what the Bible said. And so the next week, I set my alarm and got up again to look at him, see if he was going to say something stupid this week. But so I had no idea where Franklin, Tennessee and Arno Road was, but I got in my car, didn't have Google Maps, just drove down 96. And there was Arno Road, and I turned down it, and there was Grace Church of Franklin. And I walked in, and I sat down, long hair, leather jacket, you know, and sunglasses, whole bit. I'm sitting down, and the preacher there, who it turns out was a guitar player, a musician in his young life, walked by me, stopped, looked back, and said, "I've seen you on television." And I thought, "Oh, I'm made, you know, oh." And so he and I struck up a friendship. And I started going out there, driving out there, taking my family out there. The kids were both still in car seats, you know, driving back and forth. And then I was learning. I was engaged. And I went, okay, well, that's the church where I met like Elder Ward and so many other folks. So one day I walked into the assistant pastor's office, and he had Calvin's Institutes on his bookshelf. And I had an awakening moment where I went, oh, this is Calvinism. Oh, okay. And he gave me Lorraine Bettner's The Reformed Doctrine of Predestination, a big, thick tome. And I read it cover to cover. And by the time I was done with it, I was thoroughly reformed. I shouldn't say thoroughly. I was mostly reformed. I still struggled with limited atonement. But then one day, a mutual friend gave me cassettes of Teaching Through the Five Doctrines of Grace by David Morris, who I did not know. And by the time he got done teaching on limited atonement, sitting out there in my car, this terrible little bad cassette, all hissy, noisy, but I'm listening to David's voice, and by the time he got done, I said, it's got to be that way. There's no other choice. It has to be that way. And I called John Riesinger, and I said, who's David Morris? And he said, oh, you're going to like him. And a couple weeks later, David was here at that church in Franklin. And we met at Luby's cafeteria, and 2 hours later, we were best buddies. So I learned doctrinally mostly from Lorraine Bettner,
who's a good source.
Who's a good source. I've read some of his other books and went, no, but that book, that's really good. Yeah. Also, there was a book by Michael Scott Horton, Putting Amazing Back into Grace. And that was a good book, too. But at the end of it, it got really Presbyterian and got into baptizing babies and everything else. And I thought, well, now I can't give that book out. And so that was really the inspiration to start writing By Grace Alone, was to be able to create a book that people could read that was simple enough to understand the doctrines. So it was the church in Franklin and that book and David Morris. He was very influential.
When you came from California, had you already studied church out there?
I had served a four-year internship at a church out there.
Okay.
It was an Arminian church, but that's, yes.
Had you gone to like seminary or anything, or just...
No. The church has been my seminary.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been very fortunate to be in good churches. And that's why I do what I do here and teach people.
Okay.
Because that's what the church is supposed to do.
Yes.
So when you were in California and before you had that internship, what year was that? When you started your internship?
82.
Is that about right?
No.
That's a little early. It would have been about 84 I was hired on.
But you first went to...
But I first started going there, around 82, yeah.
Yeah. So then you went and had this internship and you're studying the Bible. Then you moved here from California to come to Smyrna. What year?
Megan was born here. She was born 6/7/8/9. Her birthday is Friday.
What is it?
So that's June 7th, 89. And she was born here. My son was born in 88 in California. So somewhere in the middle there.
Between 88. Gotcha. So you moved here.
Steve.
I have two, but I don't want to hog the space all of the time.
You've been talking all night.
Yeah, can you talk?
I don't know where I land on rapture, post-millennial, all that stuff. I haven't put any time into that.
Yeah.
Just to be honest.
Let's do it.
What event would have to happen for you to realize that the rapture is not true?
The Bible would have to disappear? I don't know what else to say.
I know the Antichrist is supposed to come. I mean, you know, and all this stuff.
Yeah, but I don't believe we're going to be here to see him. Because according to Daniel, he's going to make a seven-year peace pact with Israel. That is the beginning of Daniel's 70th week. That's the time of the tribulation period. And I believe pre-tribulationally that we won't be here for that. So
would that be the event then?
He was saying to know that there was no rapture, to give up on the rapture, what event would.
Yes, exactly.
And I don't think there is an event. Now, I will say, I listen to, postmillennialists and amillennialists all the time because I want so badly to be correct. And I listen with an open mind and say, okay, convince me.
I want it to be correct, for sure.
Yeah. And so I turn them on and go, okay, convince me. And invariably they end up saying something unbiblical or they end up spiritualizing things that are obviously genuine, factual. So eventually the argument falls apart. I was listening just the other day to a biblical defense of postmillennialism. And it was an hour long and the first 50 minutes... were trashing the other views, but there was no biblical defense of postmillennialism. So I listen all the time because I want to know and I want to be convinced. If I'm wrong, convince me. So, yes, Paige, you had your hand
up. I was going to say, could you explain postmillennialism? Because I don't get it. Like, what?
Paige, you don't have time for that.
Come on, Paige.
A whole lot of time. Like, what is your biblical support for postmillennialism?
Read Lorraine Bettner.
Lorraine Bettner is a post-millennialist, and he's written a big book on it, which I have read, and which was one of the books that made me go,
Yeah.
I will try, except that post-millennialism, its underlying assumption, I find contrary to Reformed theology, the more I listen to it, because in Reformed theology, it's all God working by himself to accomplish his goals. He's the one who's doing the creating. He's the one who's doing the saving. He's the one that's doing the judging. And he's doing it all by himself. But when it comes to the kingdom, suddenly the church has a role in it And it's God in the church, with the church in some kind of synergistic way, accomplishing the growth of the church. And I get it. Postmillennialism got its foothold in, especially, you know, in Europe and America, after the printing press and the word of God was going out and churches were being built. And it certainly seemed, for all intents and purposes, that the church militant was accomplishing its goal of kingdom building on the planet. And then there were these two events called World War I and World War II. And we've been at war ever since. And we were always at war before that. And so there is no evidence of the world getting better. And in fact, the Bible says that men will wax worse and worse. So I find it contrary to real Reformed theology, and I find it contrary to clear biblical statements. And I've yet to hear a solid biblical defense. The guys that I've listened to try to defend it talk about their families and talk about their grandchildren and talk about, you know, all their rationales. And what if we're still in the early days of the church? What if there's still thousands of years to go? And so, yeah, but none of that's Bible. Show me something in the Bible that will convince me. It's exhausting. Yeah. Steve, you said you had two questions.
Yes. Hypothetically, if there was a Middle Tennessee spiritual church event, or whatever you want to call it, there was Roman Catholics, there were Charismatics, and now the UMC, Buddhists.
Sign us up.
Huh?
Sign us up.
Oh, yeah. Would we participate in that?
No.
Good. No.
Why would we?
I figured that was going to be the answer. We barely made it to simplest from our
ones. Does the doctrine will like Gideon ministry? Will they align?
Say that again.
The Gideon ministry has very strict.
We have supported the Gideons in the past. We've even twice had Gideons here speaking to the church. When I allowed them to come in, I said, you cannot raise money while you're here. We will give you a check, but you can't raise money off the people here. But then I went to one of their events, one of their dinners that I was invited to, and it was so solidly Arminian that it was disturbing. So no, we would not align theologically with the Gideons. I like what they're doing, the idea of spreading Bibles around. Good, well, there's nothing to complain about. But
your faith and message does not match.
But yeah, in fact, the last time that they were here, and they've never come back, the last time that they were here, the two men sat listening as we were talking about some Reformed concepts, and oh, the guy that was sitting right where Tom is, I mean, he was scowling at me and just, I mean, the level of dislike and... Because they both sat through the sermon, and then I let them make their presentation at the end. And they couldn't get out of here fast enough, and they haven't called to come back since.
So it doesn't match.
Yes, sir.
I was just going to comment on what he said. My dad had, when he preached, he was offered a big church, and that's what they said. He said, I'm not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big church. I grew up in small churches just like this,
right?
With him, and but he said at some point he got the opportunity to go to a really big church, but they wanted him to tone it down. He said, "No, thank you."
Yeah, I have known several guys that way who admit, "Okay, you're telling the truth. You're being really biblical here, but I can't do that." One guy said, "I would lose my health insurance and the parsonage my family lives in."
And that's scary for, you know?
Yeah, and that's scary for him.
And you don't put it in that faith that God had to give.
Yes, ma'am.
I know we talked briefly about this last night. I think it's important, and I think a lot of pastors have mentors, or says in the scripture to counsel with men. I know you mentioned brethren. Ward, and I don't know if I've met him and know who he is, but I know David, you know, he's my Facebook friend, and we met on vacation, and at that conference, and David, but did you have many men in your life that you can share, you know, like your marriage situation that you talk things out with, that sees those
yes.
blind spots, slows us down, yeah. and help us make, you know, Christ-like decisions?
Yeah. In fact, Elder Ward's dead. He's been dead for 10 years, 12 years now.
Okay.
But I think I said one Sunday morning that Elder Ward said, if you're doing the job right, you're like a giant dumpster. Everybody brings their troubles and dumps it in you. Mm-hmm. The second part of that was, he said, and you've got to have somewhere to unload it.
Right.
And so we all talk to each other and unload. And one of the benefits of that is, you're talking to men who aren't part of your congregation,
right.
and so they have an outsider's perspective.
Right. Maybe they can help with marital, they can help with...
Right. Anything else? Ellie, what's your question?
Come on, Ellie.
Cough it up, Ellie. What are you thinking?
She wants to know if you're a superlapsarian.
Superlapsarian.
Yeah.
No, I would say I'm infralapsarian.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can't believe you would ask it, Ellie. I'm embarrassed.
You listen, and you would know that.
Oh, either, I forgot. We were talking to our daughter on the way here, and she said to say hi to everyone.
Oh,
tell
me about her.
When's she coming?
I'm going to ask her. I'm going to say, hey. Yeah. But she did say, since Pastor Jim is answering questions tonight, ask him what the winning lottery ticket numbers are.
Do you think if I knew that,
yeah.
that you wouldn't all be aware of that?
We have a much bigger
we would.
Establishment to
yeah.
pray to God in.
You only have to split it 25 ways, right?
Yeah. I guarantee if I win $1 billion, you'll all get a piece. Yeah. So you guys just root for me. Yes, sir.
Even me?
Yeah, even you. No, I'm sorry, you're moving away.
Okay, so, you know, of course you would have to play the lottery to win it. So.
Right.
So Ming, on Sunday when I said that Wednesday was going to be Ask Me Anything night, I'm right here. I can see all of you.
You already answered my question.
Oh, okay, because I saw you and Erica look at each other and kind of grin.
Yeah, she told me to ask the date.
Okay, but it was answered?
You say you don't have the date, so I'm asking.
That's the answer, right?
That's the answer.
Good.
I don't have a date.
Anything else?
I have one. You said, because I'm just trying to get the chronological order, you know, what you shared, because you said after coming from California, you took a year off and you just read the Bible.
Yeah.
That means that you didn't work outside the, I don't know what you
I didn't
saying.
Work outside
you said,
the.
You said, I didn't know if you were in ministry then. You said, I took a year off to read the Bible. And that's
yeah.
all you did. That was
yeah, I didn't go to church. I didn't want anybody telling me what to think
what
about the Bible.
I was
like an occupation. For years.
I had a job.
Okay.
Yeah, we didn't pay him for a long time.
Year,
okay.
and
you're
make him take a paycheck.
Yeah. As a pastor, like, so that when you came back from California, I was trying to understand, you took training out there as an internship and studied the Bible for 4 months, and then you came here to start a church. Or did you even know?
What?
But you said something
four
about
years.
Arnold Road.
4 years, yeah.
4 years.
4 years.
4 years or 4 years of the internship.
Yes.
Okay. Then you came out here and you said, I took a year off to study
mm-hmm.
the Word. And
right.
And then he started going to church.
He took a year
okay.
off from church.
Oh, it took a year off church, and you
yes.
just read your Bible at home.
Right.
But you had your own church.
Yeah, I didn't want anybody telling me what to think about the Bible. I just wanted to learn the Bible.
You just want to go to the Bible and have private time, okay.
Uh-huh.
Can you share some of your testimony? Because I know you were talking about where you went to church, but when God felt he pulled your heart, when you became a born-again believer, or can you share kind of your testimony?
Yeah, briefly. Is everybody up for that? I know you're probably anxious to leave.
Well, I would rather hear it. You know?
Yeah, it's not complicated. I was in a rock and roll band. I had some pretty reasonable success. As you know, you told me your friend has the records.
Yeah, I remember that song.
Yeah. And then while we were really at our peak, everything was going good. Easter of 1981. Well, I should back up and say, I had a friend who gave me an NIV Bible. And I did sit down and started reading the book of John, because she said, start here, start at John. And so I read the book of John, and when it reached the point where Jesus was leaving, and he said, and where I go, you can't come, I became emotional, and I realized I miss him, and I started getting all weepy, and I closed that book, and I put it down, and I went, okay, that was scary. I'll just leave that right here. So then Easter 1981, I'm in my apartment in San Rafael. I have this little tiny TV in my apartment. It's 2 a.m. I'm looking for anything to watch. And there was the guy who pastored the church that Tom and I met in. And he was teaching on the proof of the resurrection. And he said, I'm not asking you to take anything on faith. I'm going to show you factually that the resurrection had to have happened. And when he got done, he looked into the camera and he said, now settle it. And he said, because if he got up out of the grave, he has more right to lay claim to your life than you do, or however he put it. And so I walked out into the garden outside my apartment. I looked up at the sky. I didn't know any Christianese. I looked up and I said, checkmate, you win. And from that moment, you can chart it. From that moment, my rock and roll career tanked, and I mean tanked hard. But meanwhile, my Christian life was steadily improving. So I moved back to Los Angeles and went and found that guy at that church. That was 82. And then a couple of years later, I was in their intern program.
And what was that church name, or that pastor?
Faith Center was the name.
Is they still have a church?
No. No, he's dead. He's long gone.
Oh, but it's, yeah.
I say that so flippantly.
Because that does not believe the doctrine you believe.
No. When I got out here and came in touch with Reformed theology, it made much more sense. And because of my year of reading and listening to the Bible, I was hearing all these words like election and predestination and all these things that nobody seemed to be talking about. Right. But here they were in the Bible, and contextually, it was clear to me that God was the actor in all those circumstances. So then when I heard somebody say that from the pulpit, I'm all in.
Yeah, Jennifer Young came to my door 17 years ago, didn't you, Jennifer?
Yep.
You know, so she was talking over my head.
Anything else? So I really, in one night, I answered all your questions? How is that even feasible?
Because you've been an open book.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Okay, so let me ask you another question. Do you think this would be a beneficial thing to do every quarter or whatever, to just have a night where you guys can come, bring your theological questions? We won't make it so much about me. We'll make it about, because I know that everybody's at a different place in their Christian journey, and you may very well bump into things that you want to discuss and you want to get feedback and opinions from other people in the room. And there are some very smart Reformed people in the room who can answer your questions. So do you see this as being something beneficial that you'd like to keep doing?
Yes, sure.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Besides private lessons.
Yeah, besides private lessons is what I mean. I mean, I love it when you break the words. Yeah. Because it's so much information that I never was exposed to. And
there are at least 2 texts in the library in the back.
Oh, yeah? Oh, great. Okay, thank you.
Because there's so much online stuff now.
Yeah,
there's a lot of stuff. Learning basic Greek online. And I'm not a Greek expert. I don't pretend to be a Greek expert. I just know how to study.
Yeah.
So.
Got a question.
There's a surprise.
You can have notes like you do, because some of them I'm visual and I'm making notes, but I mean, like when you use some Greek, can we have a handout for us old school? Because I'm, you know, I could probably try to bring my pad and, you know, get on the internet, but just.
You'll have to learn the Greek alphabet.
I'm just saying, I mean, like, is there ever a handout? I know I meant to get the seven.
There have been times when there were handouts, okay. Yes.
I like.
It's not something I do on a regular basis. I used to always put my notes on my blog, and in fact, the stuff from just this past Sunday, I've had several people request my notes, and I sent them to them. I'll email you the notes.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Happy to do it.
Because sometimes I can't listen to it, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know.
Okay, I guess we're done here.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. I'm astounded every week when I show up here and other people show up too. I keep figuring one of these Sundays you're all going to look at me and go, you know what, that's good, we're done. And I'm constantly amazed that you've put up with me and been my friends through all of this and supported me through all the ups and downs, and I am eternally grateful to every one of you. Go ahead. Say,
no, you go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I know this has kind of been an in-house conversation tonight,
uh-huh.
But did you record that, or were you just using that?
I did record it.
Okay, because there might be a couple other folks who wanted to be here, and they could. And we can maybe get that to them, but not an online thing. So.
Will it be online?
I don't know if it's going to be online. I might. I mean, there are plenty of people online who have asked.
Okay. So. There you go.
Well, when you turned everything up, I was just going to say... how grateful we are to have you as our teacher, and we have visited churches. But listen, and I'm like, what a waste of time. I got dressed to come here to the other church when I could have been at GCA and actually learned something, you know. So.
Well, thank you for saying that.
Yeah, I found that all
13 churches. By the way, I visited 13 churches.
It hasn't taken me 13.
I understand.
It is so. Yeah.
Well, let me say in closing then.
Yeah.
Don't know what that's about. Let me say in closing, everything that you've heard tonight, whatever your reaction to it is, that's a fair reaction. Through the course of our 23 years now, by the way, I got that so wrong on Sunday that I wouldn't even put it on the internet. It was our 23rd anniversary on Monday. We've begun our 24th year. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was the 24th anniversary of my ordination last month.
Yes.
And I got them all. Anyways. Through those years, there have been people who, because of my private life, have decided to leave, and I have never argued with them. I have always said, your reaction is legitimate, whatever your reaction is. If you can't come to GCA, some of them, surprisingly, have admitted to me later, because I remain friends with almost all of them, told me later, you know, I don't come to GCA, but I listen every week. So that means what we're doing, the teaching, still has value. And that's what I try to differentiate, is the teaching and God's word, that's what's of value here. Me, my life, I'm a broken old man. I've been beat up, I've been beaten down into submission at this point. But it's not about me. And so whatever your reaction to it is, that's fair. And I'm grateful that you decided to applaud instead. But if there was anybody who said, well, that's... If Charlie now said, what? I didn't know for 6 months, and that's it? They're gone? Yeah.
That's it.
No. Yeah. Hey, I actually drove Charlie and her husband off one time with my own sarcasm.
Yes.
That's a true story. And I made changes. You applauded me for that? I made changes to the way that we do our Sunday morning service because of that. And so, fortunately, I'm trainable. But I appreciate you all very much, and Hope you have a good night. Who wants to pray for us?